I'm Leslie McShane, and this is The New Old You, a place where women over 50 are able to come together to figure out who they are now and what they want as they move forward into this new phase of life. What better way than to do this rediscovering together with guests that can help us figure all of it out? It's time to make some space for yourself because honestly, you deserve it. Hey everyone, this is The New Old You and I'm Leslie McShane. Marriage, the act of being in a close relationship with someone not already in your immediate family. A conscious decision was made to be with this person in good times and in bad, in sickness and health and all of that. In our 50s, during times of an empty nest and perhaps taking care of our aging parents, and now with the added stress of navigating a pandemic together in close quarters, relationships have been and are being put to the test constantly. And it doesn't matter if you've only been married for a few years or over 20. As my husband, Mike, and I have reached 26 years of marriage, it can be shocking or scary for me when I see or hear of close friends who are ending their marriages now, after all that they've been through. It makes me feel like my own relationship could be vulnerable in some way. So I'm always interested in making sure that our love and connection lasts. Today, I'm so grateful to have with me Laurie Gerber, a relationship and life coach, to talk about how to evaluate our relationships, how to work through issues if you and your partner are struggling, and when to know when it's really time to walk away, but as friends. Laurie has been featured on the Today Show, the Dr. Phil Show, and on A&E's The Marriage Test. She has been coaching individuals, couples, and groups for over 20 years in the Handel Method, which I'm sure she may explain. And she even used this method to rebuild her own relationship in a near-divorce experience. To her, love is a verb, and it's her job to help you get better at it. So please welcome to the podcast, Laurie Gerber. Hey, Laurie, how are you?
I'm great, Leslie. That was such a good introduction. That might have been the best one I've heard.
Really?
Thank you.
Oh,
yeah,
you are welcome.
Framed it. Now I'm excited to talk about all this stuff.
Oh, well, good. I'm glad because I tell you what, talking about relationships is so important. And I tell you, when people our age have been married as long as we have, we can tend to take those relationships with our partners for granted, that they're always going to be there. But, you know, that's not always the case. But before we get to all that, back up. I want you to give us a little bit of background on you and how you began doing the work that you do.
Yeah, it's a fun story because I tell my clients, by the way, that there are these different stages where people's relationships really, really get challenged. Mm-hmm. And one of them is after about 7 months where you're like, is this person my person? Right. Really? Now that I really know them. And then one of them is when you have young kids and your whole entire life is absorbed and absolutely consumed between little kids and running a household and maybe careers and maybe aging parents and all that. And then when your kids leave or are about to leave and you're like, whoa, a second.
Who is that?
30 more years with this person? Wait, why did I pick them to begin with? So I came to coaching in that middle one where now I came for career coaching, just to be clear, because that was socially acceptable to get help for. Mm-hmm. But my coach used the Handel Method, and the Handel Method requires that somebody do an expose on all areas of their life. So career, health, body, love, family, fun and adventure, spirituality, time, relationship to self, home, et cetera, et cetera. So I had to hand in this assignment about all the areas of life before I got started on coaching. Hmm. And when she looked at my love life, I was now, I guess, about 10 years into my marriage. I'm now 5 years into my marriage, 10 years into my relationship. Mm. I'm now almost 28 or 29 years into my relationship. So it was, you know, relatively early in the relationship, but we'd had many years behind us. And when she said, rate it on a scale of 1 to 10, I gave it a 4. Mm. So if my dream was connected intimacy and growth and great sex, my reality was tolerating each other, fighting, effectively keeping the children alive and the businesses, right. But that was about it. And it looked kind of like what I thought most other people were doing at our age with those age kids, but it was still I couldn't say more than a 4. Right. So instead of helping me in my career, she was like, you are about to tank your marriage, honey. You might want to just look over here for a minute.
Yeah. And all those things are related.
Indeed.
I'm sure that was affecting your career.
100%. 100%. She said, basically, like, I can help you with your career, but right now you can't even think straight because number one, you're tanking your marriage. You're not being the kind of parent you want to be. And you're addicted to sugar and you're eating all day to get your intimacy needs met, which is affecting everything else. So you can't even think straight to work on your career. We got to go in order. So then I proceeded to go through what's about a 6-month process of working through my relationship with my husband, I wasn't near divorce. I believe in staying married, but he was not as much of a jerk as I was. So he, you know, he was like, if this keeps going, I don't think I can do it anymore.
Yeah, I'm out. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't even that had me pay attention. He started flirting with my assistant. Oh. And then I was like, oh, wait, I could actually lose it. Like it was a
wake up call.
It was a wake up call. That's a perfect way to put it. So I went through the curriculum. I did all the exercises and it worked. And it worked so much better than I thought it ever would, because it didn't just save our marriage. It made us both better. It made me more proud of who I was. It made things more fun. It made things easy. You know, it was just like such a great process and result. So that was all part of my beginning to fall in love with the Handel method. And within a year, I was training to be a coach. And within a year and a half, I could do that couples process that she had done with me. And to this day, people come to me from couples counseling. People come to me from other things they've tried. And I've never heard of anything like what we do. It's really special. It's really different. Frankly, it's a real pain in the ass for me and for the people who do it.
Right.
But it really, really works.
Well, anything worth it has got to be hard. I mean, if it were easy, everybody would have wonderful marriages.
So true. Yeah. So true.
So how did your husband feel about you going through this? And did he have to participate as well? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't a one-way street.
Yeah. So I've worked with people where only one person in the couple wants to do the work and the other one doesn't want to come to coaching, but they have to want to participate. So if you really want to go clean up your messes and reconstitute your vows and really recreate what you're committed to and design the next chapter, which is very necessary around menopause for every individual, much less every couple. So it does require the participation of both people, but it doesn't require that they be in coaching. So when I brought all of this home to my husband, he was not in coaching at that time. And he still answered my questions and listened to what I wanted to share and participated in the activities because he didn't want to get divorced.
Right. Right. So let's talk about midlife relationships in midlife and all of the stressors that are pushing it. Okay. Let's get out the list.
I just think about what would I even do if we had a divorce? Like, how would I be taking care of my youngest child and my mother right now if there was nobody at home? It's just, I'm so glad I stay married. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not saying everyone should. I'm just saying, wow, it's a lot.
Yeah. So there are those things. Looming retirement. That's another one. Because financial issues as you enter midlife can be crushing. Then you got a pandemic on top of everything. How do we deal with these stresses?
I mean, humans are survivors. We figure it out, but we don't generally do it that well. Or I would say the thing I help people do is get into alignment with their dreams, like get into alignment with their highest ideals. When my coach found me, it wasn't like I was a disaster. I was in alignment with some pretty mediocre ideals. Like, I'm going to survive this day. I'm not going to hit my children. I'm going to keep my marriage. Like, they were fine. Like, I was in alignment with something. I wasn't off the charts. I just had never even taken the time to think about, what do I really want? What would make me proud? And then what do I have to do mentally, emotionally, and physically to accomplish that? So people are surviving on all kinds of levels and then anesthetizing themselves with drinking and food and gambling and the internet and whatever you like, sleeping, you know, whatever your
right.
Mine was food and sugar. Everyone's got one so that they can anesthetize to how bad it actually is, to how incongruent it actually is to what you want. But we do survive. We do generally survive. We do generally keep making it to our grave.
Yeah. Yeah. So I know a lot of couples and they sleepwalk, I guess, for lack of a better term, through their relationship, through the years. Like you said, they're kind of doing the daily thing. I'm not hitting my kids and you know, I'm making it through the day and getting to the next one. And then all of a sudden their children are gone and they wake up and find that they are so unhappy or that their relationship isn't working for them anymore. There have got to be some signs along the way.
Yes.
To determine that you need to be doing some work. What are some of the signs we should look for?
You know, if I could tell people to just start this process perimenopause or like early 40s, like that would really solve a lot of problems. One of my followers on Instagram sent me an article yesterday that said that I want you to actually guess what they said. The things that people pick their partners for are not the things that correlate to the success of the relationship. Mm-hmm. So people pick their partners based on
how they look,
attractiveness, right? Mm-hmm. Their career, how tall they are, mm-hmm. their race, right? Like very,
how much money they're making,
very surface things. So guess what is the number one correlate? Or the number one, I'm not thinking of the scientific word, but what's the highest determinant of a successful relationship? What do you think the feature is?
It's one feature. It's not like something that we've mentioned. Feature.
It's one thing that is the best determinant of whether or not the couple will be successful. Like happy as a couple.
Well, I would like to say ability to communicate, maybe humor.
That's what a lot of people say, but get this, it's already being a happy person.
Oh,
already being a happy person with your life. So the signs that
I just had a light bulb.
Me too. Right. It's like the funniest article. So the signs that it's not going to be good when the kids leave are if you're already not happy. Mm. And that's why this homework assignment that we give our clients when we start the handout process, where you have to literally go, what's a 10 for me on a scale of 1 to 10? If a year from now I kicked ass and took names in that area, what would that area look like? Not fantasy, but like if I was at my best, what would that area look like as a 10? And if that's a 10, where am I now? Remember, I was at a 4 in love and why? Mm-hmm. And so I was working on my life. Like I had to work on my life. And so when people look at their life, and a lot of people give up their career or their sense of contribution to society when they're focused on their kids. And then if you bring in an aging parent, that is a lot of caregiving where it might not be in alignment with your purpose or what you love to do on the planet. And you wake up and the kids are gone or the parent dies or both. And holy crap, you got nothing. Mm-hmm. So the warning signs are you at an 8 or above in all those areas to begin with in your 30s and 40s.
Right.
Or are you too busy and blaming everyone else?
Right. That's what I was going. That's what I was going to mention next, because, you know, you're talking about a good relationship with someone else starts with yourself. And we're all very quick. If things aren't going well, we're very quick to point the finger at our partner.
Oh, it's easier.
Oh, so much easier. Yes. So let's, if there were some excuses that we were making to ourselves, what are some of those that we might hear coming from our own head, from our own mouth?
Yeah. I know these are like the ones I hear all day. So too busy is the number one excuse that people make. Other people need me. I don't actually have a say here.
Right.
Which is so really, it's heartbreaking because of course you have a say. Of course you do. Mm-hmm. But, and of course there's a lot of demands on you. 100%.
Yep.
True. So funny. I stepped foot in my kid's school today for the first time this year.
You're a woman after my own heart.
I did not give at the school. Right? Like I did not.
Yeah.
I met with my mother and father, my mother-in-law, my aunt and my uncle, and my children every single week by Zoom to have a meaningful, spiritual, beautiful, personalized. Oh, and my brother and sister-in-law and their kids. Every single week, I gave my full heart, attention, and time to what nourishes me so deeply to be part of my family and the intergenerational connections and the spiritual life we want to have. Mm-hmm. That is what I gave my time to. I did not volunteer for the PTA. I'm letting the school and the teachers take care of educating my child. Right. That is what I chose based on my highest ideals. I also work out every day and I meditate every day and I have sex with my husband regularly. I make time for that. And I sleep 7 hours a night. Mm-hmm. I make time for that because that is what makes my life work. So too busy is not true. Even for single parents, I'm so sorry. Even for you, it's not true. You have 24 whole hours a day and I only need you to sleep 7 of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, What are some other things? Yeah. Not having time. That's
too tired. Too tired. Where I go back to like, eat healthy, exercise, and sleep at night.
Right.
And then the only reason you're too tired is because you're avoiding some shit you don't want to deal with.
Right.
Like big time. You are not actually tired. You either have a health issue you're not addressing, a marriage issue you're not addressing. You're lying about something that's keeping you up at night and making you anxious, or you're lying about something and you don't want to deal with it. So you're exhausted because you're holding so much weight. Mm-hmm. So too tired and too busy are BS, but very popular. Mm-hmm. And then the other most popular is it's their fault. When I came to coaching and she said, why don't you have the intimate connection you want? I said, because he's a jock. He likes, and I was like, he's not that kind of guy. He doesn't like to talk. He doesn't like to connect, which was so not true, but I believed it. I was like, we're just not cut out for this. This is just not in the cards for us. It's good enough. We'll focus on the kids. We'll focus on our work. It's fine. Right. It looks good on paper. We look fine. Right. Mm. So
what a terrible way to live. Looks good on paper.
It was a four, right? Like it wasn't a two. We look good on paper, but it was not the soul, my soul or my dream or my heart or whatever you want to call that, that part of you was absolutely not okay anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. It was like, we've been busy. We spit out some kids and built a business and found a place to live and all that, you know, but
check box. Right.
Yeah. Can't be what it is. Yeah. So it's their fault is such low hanging fruit, but I can say from my 10,000 hours of experience, it's never true. It's part of the truth.
Feels true.
It's part of the truth of the dynamic of what's going on, but it is not where there's going to be the most effective work at when you start the process. Looking at what's their fault is not going to be the right place to start.
Yeah. So you got to start working on yourself. What's the first thing that you need to do?
The first thing you do is you set the GPS. Just like if you were going to go on a trip somewhere new, you would put the address into your GPS and put it up on your little dashboard. Same thing. What's the dream? What's the 10? Where what do I actually want? Because I want a connected, intimate conversation. Some people want to go poly and date other people. Some people want to, just spend more time together. Some people want to spend less time together. Some people want to go disco dancing, right? Like different people have different dreams. Mm-hmm. And that's the part of the process that gets you into your heart and gets you caring and softens you and makes it worth it to do, like you said, the hard work that you're going to need to do. And it's also an opportunity to find out what their dream is and see if they do coincide. If they are reconcilable dreams, because you guys might've started out with a really good shared dream and one of you might've changed or both of you might've changed and you really don't have a shared dream anymore. That's a possibility.
So how do you start going about bringing that other person with you? Cause you're doing this work on yourself. They might not feel like there's a problem or.
Often they don't, which is kind of nice, right? There's some advantages if they don't think there's a problem, which is they're not
right. You know. But then they're surprised when they hear that there is.
Yes. So the first thing you would do, I think it's different for every couple. Let me just say, I think it's different for every couple where you would start, but a very healthy place to start is, here is the dream. Here is what I am imagining. I really wish we would have a year from now. Mm-hmm. And what I had to do was say, honey, I don't know why we don't have it. Like, my coach called BS on that you like sports as being the reason that we don't have it. But I don't actually know the real reason we don't have it. Could you give me some feedback? That's how I started.
Yeah. And I've heard you say, well, you know, communication is key to everything, and especially with a partner. So you're talking about, you've got to sit down and you've got to have these hard conversations. How do we, you know, how do we have these hard conversations? Because if you haven't been having them, if you've been married a long time and you haven't been having them because you have some sort of shame or you're afraid of how they'll take it, how do you break that and start having them?
Yeah. Well, there is literally a rubric. So Handel method. Yeah. Handel method comes in an audio version, you know, like a downloadable digital version, mm-hmm. which I can supply you all a link if you wish, where each module takes you through the exercises that someone would go through with an actual coach. And module 9 out of 12, so it's a little advanced, but module 9 out of 12 is literally the steps of having a difficult conversation. You're very lucky if you have a buddy in the program, or you have a coach or a therapist, or even a good friend where you can practice, because it does take practice. Mm-hmm. But eventually when you practice with your partner, you'll all learn the steps and all of the different pieces that ensure that difficult conversations go well. I talk about this on Instagram all the time, by the way. Like, it's one of the most fundamental and useful principles, is literally, how do you do it? So practice gives you confidence and courage.
Sure.
It just it gets easier. Having a rubric in front of you gives you confidence and courage. Writing it out before you do it and practicing it out loud gives you confidence and courage. Truly. And then in terms of the actual steps, you ask permission first. You never dive in as an ambush.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, that's bad.
Yeah, that's the one people miss the most.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even work with anybody, much less your partner. It's called consent. We call it consent now. Like, that should help you remember.
Ah,
you don't enter without consent.
Right. Right.
Emotionally, physically, auditorily, someone's having their whole own life before you walked in the room.
Yeah. It's not all about you all the time.
That was news to me, Leslie, but it's true. It has borne out as true. So you ask permission, you give the purpose. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want to be closer to you. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I really want to understand something. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I want us to be on the same page about this. The reason I'm bringing this up is because I think you and I can collaborate to find a great solution. So again, this is where it's helpful to have a buddy or a coach, mm-hmm. so you can, you know, get yourself there. Because if you're too emotional, you're not even going to be there in the ability to say, this is my purpose.
Right.
This is all prep. And then, you know, listen, I'm sorry I haven't brought it up sooner, or like, let me just own, I'm hormonal right now. So you own something. So all of this lube.
Right. As it were.
Mm-hmm. Very pro lube. Before you say, here's the thing, right? I've noticed you keep coming later and later home from work, and I don't know what to make of it. I'm starting to make up that it means you don't want to spend as much time with me. I have no idea if that's true, but I wanted to check in with you. What's going on for you? Mm-hmm. So you say, you do all this setup, then you say your truth or your wisdom or whatever you want to call that chunk, the meat of the sandwich. And then you listen, shh, like literally write, listen in your notes, !!
Right.
You do not speak. You even write down what they say. And then you go, so what I'm hearing you say is, right, if you've ever heard of any kind of process of listening, you need to be able to say back what you heard. So what you're saying is, you have a new project at work. It's a lot of extra pressure, and you've been being pretty upset after work, and you actually don't want to be upset around me. So you've been going to the bar instead, and you are very sorry that I got my feelings hurt by that. And you're very sorry that you didn't tell me what was really going on. And you're actually not sure exactly how to deal with it. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. Oh my God. I'm so relieved. I finally told you what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, honey, that sounds really hard. Okay, great.
You know, it's, we build up all these things in our head. You know, my husband's coming home late from work, so it must be this, it must be this. And you just have to ask.
It you have to talk to him. Not always.
But
the majority of the time. And then you go, oh my God, I can't believe
I was going to walk out with that. Right.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And it could be that maybe they don't even notice they've been coming home late and they didn't know you were upset about it until you said something.
The possibilities are literally infinite for what it could be, but our little unconsciously biased brains that are 85% negative thinking come up with the silliest, worst theories, and then we prove them true.
Right.
Like my husband doesn't want to talk to me. He doesn't want to be connected with me because he likes sports. Like that makes no sense. But I proved it true. I kept finding that it was true because how convenient, I didn't have to look at my part of the problem.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, we were talking about communication and you expressing how you feel. And then you mentioned, which is very key, is shutting up and listening. It's so important to, I mean, you have a lot to say. This person has a lot to say too. So you have to, it's not just listen, but you have to hear what they are saying. And you talk about popcorning. I've seen you mention popcorning. Can you explain what that is?
There's such a true epidemic of humans not respecting each other's space, especially in the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think women do it especially. I think women are used to being very communal and multitasking. And being
our minds are moving at a million miles an hour. Yeah.
You could I actually don't really mind when my husband interrupts me because I can hold what he's trying to say and what I'm trying to say in my mind at the same time.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of want to know what he wants to say. Cause if he interrupted me, I think it might be more important than what I'm saying. And I'm going to remember what I'm saying. I think this is more concerning to men if I'm going to generalize, but I think the world revolves around me. So if I walk into the room and my husband's at the sink, you know, listening to a podcast, or he's doing something or making his salad or even like at his computer, I just start talking to him as if I'm the main attraction. And he's like, I'm literally having a life over here. That does not work. And then I feel rejected because I think I should have a right to interrupt him at any point in the day.
I'm so guilty of this. Guilty.
I'm pretty sure most people are, especially women. And by the way, I'm in my office on the fourth floor and I have a door on my office. And then I have another door with a lock. Like no one interrupts me during the day and nobody even calls me. If they want me, they'll text me or Slack me or whatever. And I will look at it when I want to. So I'm very good at keeping my world clean, you know, free of popcorn.
But heaven forbid people not make time for you when you need it.
Say that again.
I said, but heaven forbid people don't make time for you when you need it.
And let's just put some quotes around when I need it, right? Because I don't need it. I'm just assuming that I should get it.
Right.
And so when I sat my husband down that fateful day and said, my dream is to have long connected chats with you, and I don't know why we don't have it, he said to me, you have never listened more than three sentences into anything I've ever said. You interrupt me almost immediately and not even on the topic I'm on. You make it about you and whatever you're anxious about or whatever, however it affects you, what I'm saying. Why would I even try? I stopped trying years ago.
Ouch.
Shit, but he's right. Like, and I think I'm helping. Right. Like I think the goal is me getting my way and then he'll be happy. It doesn't even occur to me to think about what's his worldview. What does he want right now? What might he be listening to on his iPod?
Right.
You know, or iPod, whatever. AirBuds.
AirBuds.
Oh, iPod, mom. So what I'm completely self-absorbed. And when he said it, I could not deny it. And I knew I had to report back to my coach. So I was like, honey, you're right. I'm so sorry. And I saw my whole life flash before me, all the people I had interrupted for years with impunity. Not even, I really thought I was helping.
Right.
We're like,
yeah.
So that was a huge turning point to take back my right to interrupt on all levels.
And that's that you can't turn that off in a day. I mean, that's something you really have to work at.
It is still on, in fact, Leslie. I still have to monitor that extremely closely.
Yeah.
To this day.
So what are some of the things that we can be doing to keep our connection with our partners tight?
Yeah.
Through time.
So everyone needs something different, but I'll tell you the linchpin things for my relationship. And I mm-hmm. think they're somewhat universal. Mm-hmm. So undivided attention, right? You don't need to popcorn if you know you're going to have undivided attention.
Right.
When I came to coaching, we probably had a date night once a quarter. Right? Like we were having sex once a quarter, right? Like there was no undivided attention. It was always either family time or busy.
Right.
Right. So that is 100% unsustainable.
And TV time is not.
Oh my God. Can we underline that, Leslie? Thank you for saying that. If you are on your phone or watching a screen together, that is not undivided attention. That is literally divided attention.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So undivided attention means the two of you are only paying attention to one another. So such a beautiful gift to give someone, your kids too, right? It's a beautiful gift to give. You give it a lot at work, right? Most of us, right? So undivided attention is one. And again, the amount that works for you and the style that works for your family and your partnership is different. I personally, now that most of my kids are grown and I have a little more space to design, we do a morning and an evening undivided attention time. Not long. We walk the kid to school, we walk back together, and then we go on a little jog, bike ride. So we get our exercise, but we're also doing undivided attention while we exercise. Mm-hmm. Huge hack, in my opinion, that I'm getting my exercise done and my undivided attention with my husband.
We do the same thing. We ride together
probably
5 days a week. Yeah.
That's a multitask I approve of because it's physical and right. And then we do it in bedtime, 20 minutes, right? Nothing extreme, 20 minutes at bedtime. And then we have sex dates twice a week. I recommend twice a week because I find after about 2 or 3 days, the good juju starts to fade. You start to not like the person as much. You forget that you shared body fluids. So I would recommend a cadence like that. Some of you are like, oh my God, I haven't had sex in years. What are you even talking about? It hurts. But blah, 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 blah. I know. Yeah. I was there.
That's another podcast.
I will come back for another podcast.
Yeah.
But again, I'm just talking about some universal things that tend to work in couples. Undivided attention, regular sex. There was one more thing. How did it go out of my brain? Do you know what it is? The right promises for you. So for me, it's not interrupting. That's crucial for me to promise. And to this day, if I interrupt, I owe him a chore. I currently owe 2 chores for him. Ooh. Like I have to do his chores, which as a selfish person, it really does not work for me.
Ooh, yeah, that wouldn't work for me either. That's like having to give somebody money for something, for nothing. I wouldn't be about that.
It is an artificial consequence that reminds you of what you said are the rules of the road.
Right.
What is right for your relationship. So another thing I had to promise back in the day was to be on time for dinner. Like I said, I work on the 4th floor, dinner's on the 2nd floor. My husband would cook and I would show up late.
Mm.
It's so rude. I'm like, no, but I was emailing. I was talking to someone important. Like, we're important.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
So on time, 6:30 on the dot, or my kids get $20.
Whoa.
Guess who's on time all the time now?
Yeah, exactly.
It turns out I can care about other people with the right system in place.
Right. So let's, I want to round back because you mentioned that magic word, the S-E-X word. And it's a big one because, you know, as long as you've been together and there's been a lot of it, at this point, there may be an intimacy disparity. I mean, maybe she doesn't want it and he does. Maybe he doesn't want it and she does. How do you meet in the middle on this?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to start with the basics. Mm-hmm. You got to be happy with your life. You actually have to be happy with your life. You actually have to be hydrated and fed well and rested and feel good in your body. I'm sorry. Everybody needs to be exercising, getting outside every day and, and eating less sugar and carbs. Like you just need to treat your body like you give a crap about its happiness, because sex happens with the body mostly. Uh-huh. So it needs to be part of how I got my sex life back from pretty much zero was I stopped eating all the sugar and stopped anesthetizing myself and entertaining myself and finding friendship with the food. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, oh, I want sensual experiences that are not food. Mm-hmm. Oh, look, here's a human who would like to hug and kiss me, and maybe even more fun stuff. So you really got to get your life good if you want your sex life to be good. Mm-hmm. That's number one.
Yeah.
And then for women in menopause, you got to talk to your doctor. There's like all kinds of things you don't even know to help. And it is a change. Bless your heart if you have no issues. Bless your heart. Please enjoy and brag to your friends. But a lot of people do have issues with that hormonal change, just like all of our hormonal changes. So get to your doctor. Don't give up until you get the right combo of lubes, meds, whatever you need.
Right.
So it feels
and don't be afraid to talk about it. I mean, many people just don't want to talk about it.
It's an emergency.
Yeah.
You stay sexy.
Yeah.
It will keep you young. It will keep your marriage alive, period. It's an emergency. So life good, physical health good, pussy wet, whatever it takes. And then you got to resolve all the issues. Right. So what did I actually do in the coaching process? Well, I laid out every single thing I was unresolved about in a very specific, codified way, similar to what I said before, where my purpose was clear. What I own is clear. What I wanted to communicate was clear. What I would like to change is clear. We lay all that out. And then we lay out our apologies for what we think would be on their list. So we create this body of truth about what's gone down in our relationship. Mm-hmm. I felt really abandoned when you were by the kid's bed every night. I felt really, you know, scared when you wouldn't come home from work. I felt whatever. It's usually 10 or 15 things, not 100. If it's 100, you're probably headed towards divorce.
Yeah.
It's usually 10 or 15. And weirdly, they match, right? Like she wants to say you don't listen and he wants to say you interrupt, right? Like, he wants to say it's not enough sex. She wants to say it's not enough intimacy.
Right.
Right. So they're usually, right. He wants to say you're scary. She wants to say, you don't tell me the truth. Right. So there's like these dynamics and you lay it all out. And then one by one by one, you address each one philosophically, emotionally, and physically until you can actually put it in the past. That is the coaching process with a couple. So until you do that, there's just landmines. There's hurts, there's resentments, there's unresolved issues, there's dynamics around family or in-laws or money or sex that are just like, you know, triggers that will keep getting triggered until you do the hard work of sorting it out.
Right, right. So I once heard, I don't remember where I heard this, but somebody was saying, if you want someone to pay attention to you, to do things for you, you need to first do something for them. You know, if you want a romantic gesture, don't sit around and wait. Create that romantic gesture yourself for your partner. What are some things that we can do? I mean, a lot of times, like when my husband and I were younger, I would rub on his head and he used to love that. And I found later years, you know, you just kind of stopped doing that. And so now that's kind of like my thing to treat him, to give him a little treat as I rub on his head. And he knows that means that I love him. So I guess we all just need to kind of examine some little things that we can do. Don't sit around and wait for your partner to show you love. You show love first.
I think you answered your own question.
And I think I just did.
I think I will just underline the stuff that made it work in the beginning is invisible to us. We don't remember that we went on dates and we rubbed each other's heads and mm-hmm. we wrote letters and we left notes and we mm-hmm. texted sexy and we made mixtapes in my day, you know, and we don't remember that there was actually a physical integrity to why it worked. And we have a million excuses why we can't do that physical integrity anymore. Uh-huh. And so, because every couple's different, right? It might be back scratching. It might be head rubbing. It might be foot tickle, whatever.
Right. Holding hands.
What I recommend you do is think back to what used to work. I used to have sex with my husband when we first met. That worked for him.
Yeah.
Right. I used to wear tight clothes, you know, like that worked for him. Right. So you think back to what worked for you all, and that's a great place to start.
Yeah. Yeah.
Before you had kids, you might've greeted your partner when they came home from work or sat with them or brought them something or looked them in the eyes or who knows?
Instead of saying, oh, here, take the kid, or you're finally home, sit down.
Yeah. Or like literally you don't even ships in the night.
Right. Right.
So imagine, right? Imagine your kids witnessing you taking a moment to go, oh my gosh, welcome home. So good to see you.
Yeah. Oh, that's key to, you know, show your kids the kind of relationship that they should be looking for. And
if you want them to have it, yes, it'd be good for them to see it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Now there are going to be some times when all of this doesn't work and a split is going to have to happen. When do you know that that's the case? And what can you do to split as friends?
I literally just asked an exit strategist the same question 2 days ago on my Instagram live.
Uh-huh.
Literally, because I was curious, what do the experts say about when is it time to go?
Uh-huh.
There's no right or wrong answer to that. I'll tell you my experience. Well, first of all, what she said is if it's abusive, you have to go.
Oh,
right?
Yes, and absolutely.
Abusive can be physical, emotional, verbal, spiritual, financial, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So you got to look across the board.
Mm-hmm.
But what I have learned to do with couples is this whole process of what's the shit list and what's the sorry list. And do they, if you can see how they very beautifully go together, like I want to be a person who listens. My husband wants to be listened to. I want to be a person who has a great sex life. He wants to be a person who has a great sex life. We want to raise our kids the same way. We have the same dreams for our future. So in doing all that work, we could see everything was resolvable
mm-hmm.
with different habits and different ways of thinking and with forgiveness.
Right.
It was resolvable. But there are some things that are not resolvable or forgivable. And that's what this relationship exit strategist, Tanya Carter, said. And what I have found with my couples is if you cannot forgive, it's not ever going to be in the dream state. You're not going to have the dream state in a relationship if you cannot forgive.
Right.
And if there is something irreconcilable, for example, I now want to have an open marriage. I don't want to have an open marriage. Or I now want to move to Timbuktu. I want to stay in New York. I want to convert religion and go out on a journey. I do not agree with that religion. You know, I want more kids. I don't want any more kids.
Right.
Some things are irreconcilable. Right. Not all.
Philosophical
or I can't
reasons,
forgive your cheating. I can't forgive your cheating. That's irreconcilable.
So
in those cases, I think it's great to go, we did all our work. We resolved everything we could. We apologized for all the hurts. We apologized for all the ways our dynamics didn't work for the other. We saw clearly the ways in which we messed with each other and the ways in which we are just irreconcilable.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud you if you leave someone who doesn't want the same thing, or they want to work 20 more years and you want to retire and travel around the world. That's not compatible. There are things that are just literally not compatible. And those people can break up as friends, telling the truth about everything, like a job. It's okay. The job was great. It grew you. You learned things. You had great relationships. You built something fabulous. You got these great kids. Doesn't mean you have to keep staying in that job if that job is no longer a fit for your dream.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the context for an amicable breakup.
That's great advice. So we also at this age probably have children that are getting ready to be in you know, long-term relationships or marriages of their own, and they are at the edge, getting ready to jump in. What is the best piece of advice for them so they will last as long as we have in our marriages?
Oh, I got goosebumps. Well, first of all, I don't preach lasting if it's not in integrity, if it's not in alignment. So I'm not teaching my kids make it last no matter what. I'm teaching my kids find a great love and tell the truth the whole way through.
Ooh, yeah, I like that.
And then modeling it is, of course, the best way to ensure it. And then my advice, and this is my advice, whether you're dating, whether you're young, whether you're old, is make sure you're meeting the needs of your head, your heart, and your hoo-ha.
Yes.
Make sure you're meeting your practical needs. So if they don't want to have kids and you do, that's not your person.
Right.
Your heart, meaning you trust them. You feel good around them. It feels good. And you're turned on. Don't sell out when you're young, but even when you're older, don't sell out. You can get it back right. on any of those three. If I'm giving like bottle-able advice,
yeah, it's
the three H's, head, heart, and hoo-ha, ignore one at your own risk.
Yeah. I love that. And I would add what you said in the very beginning, be happy with yourself.
100%.
Yeah. Or else it's not going to work.
Not going to work.
So how can people find you? What are you doing? And what do you have coming up?
Yeah. The fun place to hang with me is on Instagram.
It is
Lori
fun.
Gerber, yeah. Lori Gerber _ coach. I am enjoying myself as much as a person my age can.
I think you're hilarious, myself.
Social media. I'm trying. It's fun to watch. It's fun to interact. And I really do interact on the gram. So Lori Gerber _ coach is a fun place to collect wisdom and giggle and talk. Uh-huh. And then LoriGerber.com. is where you can find out about all my programs and all the things. I will give you a link to Inner You Life and Inner You Love. Those are the digital handout programs. So hundreds of dollars an hour. I'm usually full with coaching clients. I take new clients, you know, regularly, but not a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like a couple a month at the most. Mm-hmm. So I love doing the private coaching and the couples coaching. It's amazing. It's very expensive. The beauty is you can do it digitally. So if you can't afford a private coach or counseling or whatever else you might be choosing to do, simply doing the digital program of Inner You Life or Inner You Love or both, I'd recommend, depends which one you start with.
Right.
That's huge. And that's very, very affordable. So I would say go for digital if you can't afford coaching and you know you need help. And then lastly, I do a group coaching program called the Love In Community. It's a monthly subscription. You can come and go as you please. It's a group of very earnest people working on love and relationships. So it's daters as well as people in long-term relationships, just learning all of these tools and competencies that I'm laying out. You got to actually learn them and practice them. And
sure.
So we do that in a group coaching setting.
Awesome.
I can give you links to all that stuff.
Yes, please do. And then I will put everything in the show notes so that everybody can find it all. Yeah. So I have one last question for you, and I won't ask you what your favorite fairy tale character is.
I know that one now though. I have that.
Well, okay. So what is it? This isn't a side. What is it?
I'm a fairy godmother.
I can see that.
I grant wishes. I help people get to the ball.
I love that. Okay. And if somebody asked me that, this just popped into my head, I would say I'm Tinkerbell.
Love that.
I don't know why, but I feel that I'm a little Tinkerbell troublemaker. I can be a little bit of a troublemaker, but I like to flit around and do a little bit of this, do a little of that. Okay. So as we get into our midlife and further into our long-term relationships, what is your best advice to make sure that our relationships grow into our 60s, 70s, 80s, and maybe even beyond if we're lucky?
Oh my gosh, maybe even. Play this podcast with your partner and discuss it. Seriously.
Yeah.
It's all in what we've discussed. You have to program the GPS. You have to have a vision, or else the work of getting your mind to quiet down and not believe its excuses, and the work of keeping the promises and the dates and the romantic gestures and the not interrupting and all that, it's anchored to the dream. So you got to have the dream, you got to do the mind management, and you got to do the physical, right? Mm-hmm. It's heart, head, and body,
right?
All three. And just like the three H's, right? If you ignore one of the H's, I'm sorry, you are not as likely to succeed. If you do all three, that's my advice. If you do all three, there's no way you're not headed towards that goal. And get help, right? If you can't afford a coach or you can't do a digital program, get a buddy, watch the free stuff, do something, get support.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely get help, because I mean, the divorce rate in this country is insane. Yeah.
It just speaks to that. We didn't think we were going to live this long. Right. We didn't understand we were going to change and that it would take work. Right. And we have no role models, and it's the whole institution is changing. So obviously if you want to stay together, that's one thing. And there are tools and competencies. And if you don't want to stay together, also can be done well.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this has been awesome. I thank you so much for talking to us about relationships. And I hope that somebody heard something that triggered something in their head. You know, stop pointing fingers, get to work on yourself, set your GPS, and start working on there, your three H's, especially that third one.
Right. Shocking how much good it does for everyone. It's good for your children. Sorry to be gross, but if parents who are having sex, their kids just turn out better. I'm sorry. There's a correlation.
Yeah. No, I get it. Well, this has been awesome.
Right. When they see parents in love, right? Just think about that. Oh my God, my parents are in love, not just hanging together. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. They may say it's gross, but
they will say it's gross, but do not care. They do not mean it.
Exactly.
They do not mean it. They mean, wow, I have a deep sense of okayness inside me right now. That's what they mean to say.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And I hope you have a great rest of your day.
You too. Thank you, Leslie. Bye.
I want to thank Laurie for dropping all of this incredible knowledge on us today. I hope that you were taking notes like me and getting some really good nuggets of things to start working on. Here are just a few of the takeaways that I jotted down. Number one, the three biggest times that we start to examine our relationship is 7 months in, when our kids are small, and then when our nests become empty. Number two, the number one determinant of what keeps us together in a relationship is whether or not you are happy with yourself. Number three, work on your own life first before focusing on your relationship. When things aren't going well, it's so much easier to point the finger at our partner. You know, but they say, though, you point one finger, you got three others pointing right back at you. Number four, excuses we make to ourselves of why we don't work on ourselves. We're too busy. We're tired. It's somebody else's fault. Number five, set your GPS to begin the work. What's your number 10 on the chart? What's your dream? Then find out what your partner's dream is and see how they coincide. Number six, the steps to having a difficult conversation. Practice. It takes practice to give you confidence and courage. Ask permission. Don't ambush. We call this consent. Give the purpose. Own up to something first. Listen. Then repeat back to them what you heard. Number seven, you won't popcorn if you know that you're going to have undivided attention at some point. Make it a priority. Schedule it. Undivided attention. And remember, TV time is not undivided attention. Number eight, the basics for a great sex life are: be happy with your life. Stay hydrated, rested, well-fed. Exercise. Eat less sugar and carbs. Treat your body well. And remember, in menopause, talk to your doctor. There are so many solutions to issues of hormonal changes. Don't give up until you get the right combo of what you need. Number nine, triggers will keep getting triggered until you do the hard work of sorting it all out. Number 10, the stuff that made your relationship work in the beginning can become invisible later on. It's the hand-holding, the mixtapes, the dates, all that physical integrity. We have a million excuses of why we can't do those things now. But think back to what used to work and go there. Number 10, if your relationship is abusive in any way, it is time to go. Number 11, for our young adults, tell them to find a great love and tell the truth the whole way through. Make sure that you are meeting your needs of your head, your heart, and your hoo-ha. And number 12, when kids see their parents in love, they develop a deep sense of okayness. Thank you so much for being here today and for hopefully sharing this episode with those around you that you feel that could get some benefit from it. I really don't know anybody in any relationship, whether it's short or long, that can't get something out of this episode. Remember that relationships with others require work and cultivating, bottom line. And it all starts a relationship you have with yourself first. Now, if you want to find Lori, I'm going to be putting all of her contact info and other information that she mentioned in the episode in the show notes. So make sure to check that out. And I'll put all of my contact information where you can find me in the show notes as well. It's always fun to bring amazing and enlightening guests like Lori to you every week. And if you enjoy this podcast or any of the episodes you've heard, I would be so, so very grateful if you would go to the show page to the bottom and give it a rating out of 5 stars. It literally takes hardly any time at all. But if you do have a couple of minutes, leave a review. I love reading those and I love featuring them in my social media and in my newsletter. All right, that's enough of me. I hope everybody has a wonderful day. Mike and I will be back on Friday for another Friday Night Beer Blog. We hope that you will join us. Until then, remember to show as much compassion to others as you yourself need today. It is a crazy time, friends. So if you do this simple thing, you will be moving to make the world a better place right where you are. Sending you so much love. Take care. Till next time. See ya. Bye.